Today on the podcast, we're going to take you to Tasmania, where mountain biking is going off.
Nationally and globally, mountain biking is definitely picking up, becoming more mainstream. Tassie's a really go-to destination.
And now the one-night stand town of St Helens in Tassie is getting in on the act. But some locals are actively trying to stop new mountain bike tracks from being built.
So basically all these plants that you see all around us here, all those different understory plants, a whole lot of them will end up dying.
So do mountain bike trails do more harm than good? We'll take you out into the bush to find out. And first up on the show, Tony Abbott has taken up the offer from Scott Morrison, the new Prime Minister, to be the Special Envoy on Indigenous Affairs. So let's find out how that's going down with Indigenous leaders.
The former Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, taking up the Special Envoy role, isn't going down well with Indigenous leaders around the country.
On Triple J.
When Scott Morrison took the Prime Ministership and announced his new cabinet, he announced two additional positions and gave them to two controversial people. There was the Special Envoy for Drought, which he gave to Barnaby Joyce, bringing him back into the fold after disgracing the government with his personal problems. The second position is the Special Envoy on Indigenous Affairs, and he gave that to Tony Abbott, who many see as the key driver of the government's leadership turmoil. So after thinking about it for a few days, Tony Abbott has announced that he will be taking up the position. And many prominent Indigenous leaders are not happy, including Kimberley elder Pat Dodson, who's now a Labor senator.
Well, he cut $500 million off the budget for First Nations people. He basically called people that live in the outback communities, remote communities of Western Australia, as a life choice, and that they ought to be closed down. He's taken a view on the Voice proposition that came from Uluru as not really needed. He's not been supportive of the constitutional guarantee.
That's Indigenous leader Pat Dodson also drawing attention to the fact that Tony Abbott, even after appointing himself as Prime Minister for Indigenous Affairs in 2013, then cut $500 million from Indigenous programs in the budget. I'd love to hear your reaction to the appointment of Tony Abbott to the Special Envoy for Indigenous Affairs. Good idea? Bad idea? Could it do some good? And what would you like to see the government do on Indigenous affairs? Give me a call, 1300 055 536. To get a better sense of why Indigenous leaders are so unimpressed by this appointment, we're going to speak to a couple right now. We've got Gary Oliver here. He's the CEO of the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples. Gary, what do you think of the appointment?
I think it's a dark day for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Australia when we have to support a ludicrous appointment, which comes at, you know, the cost to the Australian government. That's just going to keep someone happy. It's going to keep someone happy in the party, but it's not going to keep the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities happy.
Do you know anyone from the Indigenous community who thinks this is a good idea?
Oh, there'll be some hand-picked peoples. There'll be the hand-picked people that Tony Abbott, when he was Prime Minister, put on the IAC, the Indigenous Advisory Council, previously. So they'll be looking for jockeying for seats on that body again. So Tony Abbott has had a history of selecting people that say yes.
Why do you think Scott Morrison did this?
Oh, Scott Morrison probably done this to keep the party happy. I mean, what a farce the Australian government has been, where we just throw out prime ministers and people lose their jobs as well. There's a lot of parliamentary staff, black and white, that had lost jobs throughout this process, and we didn't have a government that was functioning for days during the debacle. So I think he's done this just to keep that faction of the Liberal Party happy so he can proceed and govern for the next 6 to 9 months until we have a general election.
On the text line, really bad joke appointing Abbott as Special Envoy on Indigenous Affairs. Let's bring in another Indigenous leader. Melandiri McCarthy is a Labor senator from the Northern Territory. Melandiri, thanks so much for joining us. Obviously, as a Labor MP, you'll delight in putting the boot into Tony Abbott and the Liberal Party right now. But as an Indigenous woman, what was your reaction to this appointment?
Well, there's a lot of questions, Tom. Hello to you and hello to your listeners and hello to Gary up there in Queensland. But look, there's a lot that has to be asked. And I say to the Australian people, you need to look at this. You have an envoy. What does that actually mean? Yeah. I actually went to the dictionary to find out, well, what would Scott Morrison be looking at here? And I looked at, well, the Cambridge University definition says that it's about having someone who represents from one government to another. So the flip side of it could be that are we looking at the different First Nations people receiving a government diplomat to speak with them? I mean, that's the cheeky side of looking at it. But I think Australians have to ask and go, well, how much money is going to go into an office when you already have a Minister for Indigenous Affairs? What is Nigel Scullion doing? What is he thinking about this? How are they going to work together? What messages are they going to send to their department personnel and the confusing policies that they have to try and navigate through? How does he actually fit in? And that's what Australians need to be asking. How much is going to be spent on this? What are his powers and authority? He doesn't sit in the cabinet. So what can he legally do under the Westminster system?
On the text line, Michael from Monavale says, this is Scott Morrison looking after his mates. Utter bullshit. Candace from Melbourne, you say, how about they put an Indigenous person in the role? So I guess there's two things here, Gary and Malandiri. There's the first question, which is like, what is the actual point of this role? And the second question why Tony Abbott? Let's go to that second question first. What do you think of Tony Abbott being appointed, given his track record as Prime Minister, Gary?
I think it's an absolute joke. It's farcical to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. We know his history. We know what he has said about Aboriginal people living in lifestyle choices previously. The $500 million that was cut from Indigenous service delivery cost jobs on the ground. And we had some large NGOs that were city-centric that actually took up those roles that had no idea of service delivery. So since he's appointed himself as the Minister for Aboriginal Affairs and now a special envoy with his mates, our statistics have gone backwards and we're sick of looking at the deficit model. We understand that he's got a passion for looking at school retention rates and school kids in the outback. Well, Tony, wake up, mate, because more Aboriginal people live across the whole country as well. We're not just isolated to one spot.
It's an interesting point, Gary. The first thing Tony Abbott has said is that he'll focus on making sure Indigenous kids are in school. Is that the most important priority, Malandiri?
It's always important that every child, black, white, wherever they live in this country, have a decent education and access to a decent education. But we all know, Tom, that this is actually about keeping a government together. It really is. We know the reality, and Australians aren't silly. They know that this is about trying to appease a person who's been seen as a complete wrecker. And you don't have to be in politics to see that. I think the Australian people can see that.
On the text line, Tony Abbott, a special envoy for Indigenous Affairs. Why not make Pauline Hanson Minister for Immigration? Jared from Werribee, you say, surely it's just a reason to put Abbott in the middle of nowhere and not in Canberra for extended periods of time. another listener says, how about you give him a go before you rubbish him? If he doesn't perform after a few months, then get stuck into him. That would be an interesting point, Gary, except for the fact he had a go as Prime Minister and made himself Prime Minister of Indigenous Affairs.
You know, since he has been Prime Minister, we haven't had a standalone department for Aboriginal Affairs, and there's been no movement away from the deficit model. So it's important that we look at his record, and we know that his record has done a disservice to us as a people and our communities. It's like, would a leopard change its spot? Would we put Cardinal Pell in charge of child protection within this country as a special envoy as well?
As a moderate, I have tried to be optimistic about this new cabinet. This, however, is disgusting, says one listener. Mark in Melbourne, what's your reaction to this appointment?
Yeah, I think it's entirely political. I think that ScoMo just basically threw him a job offer that he had to accept. And if he didn't accept this, he would be showing that he wouldn't show allegiance to ScoMo. So I don't think it's anything to do with the Indigenous community. It's just political and trying to snooker Tony Abbott.
So, yeah, you think it has absolutely nothing to do with improving the lives of Indigenous Australians?
I think it was just a way to basically flag whether, or making Tony Abbott have to flag whether he was going to white out ScoMo in the new government, just like he did the last one.
Yeah, that seems to be the consensus view on this appointment. Thanks for the call, Mark.
No worries.
Love to hear your reaction. Give me a call, 1300 055 536. The real question, Gary and Malandiri, what should the government be doing?
Well, we know it's already been a distraction, Tom. Look at it. I mean, Tony Abbott is a seasoned performer. He has been the Prime Minister. He will love the fact that we're all talking about him. I mean, that's what was not happening in the years when he was sitting on the backbench, not being a cabinet minister, not being a prime minister. Relevance deprivation, some may call it. He's now being talked about right across the country.
Okay. So it does give us an opportunity, though, however, to talk about what should be done in Indigenous affairs. I mean, one of the major talking points was the fact that Turnbull rejected the Uluru Statement's major call for a constitutionally enshrined Indigenous voice. Tony Abbott backed that call. What do you think should be happening in that space?
Yeah, you know, you're right, Tom. We have to look at where we go from here. And, of course, what we're trying to do in the Parliament is have a bipartisan committee that encourages politicians to look at the Uluru Statement and to put the voice back on the political agenda. And I say to Tony Abbott, have a good look at the importance of what Australians are saying about the voice. If you are going to be an envoy in this space to First Nations people, we do need a voice to Parliament for First Nations people. Come on board and support the First Nations people.
Gary, if you could send a message to Tony Abbott, he is going to take on this role. He may as well do something with it. What would you like him to do?
Well, I think first and foremost, we need to echo what Malandiri has said there. The voice is the most important level of work that we do have in front of us. So there is true representation from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to the Australian Parliament. Filtering from that, our numbers are high around, you know, the child protection issues and also incarceration rates. We need agreements with the states to actually deliver on some of these targets through COAG reform.
Yeah, and in your territory, Malandiri McCarthy, you're a Labor senator in Northern Territory. There's been a lot of concern about abuse of children in Indigenous communities, particularly Tennant Creek. What do you think needs to happen there?
Well, clearly, if this is going to be the way forward, we obviously need to hear from the Indigenous Affairs Minister, Nigel Scullion, on his views here. If there are politicians absolutely sincere in this approach, it must be always bipartisan. And I think the best thing that can happen in terms of this space is certainly work on supporting the voice to the federal parliament. The high income incarceration rates as well. That is appalling. We've seen, certainly in WA, some of the concerns there with the current coronial inquest underway. We know that too many First Nations people are being jailed and dying at a rate that is just not acceptable in this country.
Malandiri McCarthy, great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
She's a senator from the Northern Territory. And Gary Oliver, CEO of the National Congress of Australia's First People, thank you for joining us as well.
Great, thank you.
On the text line, it looks like ScoMo's hammering the last two nails into his election coffin. Another listener says, follow Abbott on social media. You'll see how important community service is to him. He's very hands-on amongst Indigenous communities. Another listener says, Abbott will sort out Indigenous affairs. He has a backbone. That's why Malcolm's gone. Another person says, I give it a month.
Hack. Building tourism attractions that actually damage the environment goes against what Tasmania is supposed to be standing for.
On Triple J.
Mountain biking is a massive growth sport in Australia. Tracks are going in around the country. Ski resorts are being revived in summer. And it's taking tourists to towns like Derby in Tasmania. And just down the road from Derby is the town where Triple J is going to be hosting the massive one-night stand this Saturday. The St Helens Council also want to get in on the mountain biking wave. So they're building over $4 million worth of tracks. And one of the tracks has the very exciting name of the Bay of Fires Descent. Makes me want to get out there, which I won't because I don't want to hurt my leg again, but I might in the future. Anyway, it sounds fun, but what about the environmental impact? The impact on the local ecosystem is driving a small group of locals in their fight to stop the new trails from going ahead. I'd love to hear from you. Are you worried about the damage mountain bikes do to bushland? Give me a call, 1300 055536. All right, let's get out to St Helens with reporter Joe Lauder, who hits the trail to find out what these environmental concerns really are.
Good stuff.
Earlier this year, we brought you the story about Derby in Tassie's northeast, where the tiny, dying town had been transformed by mountain biking. Derby's a former tin mining town, and it only had 100 residents before it became a hotspot for mountain bike riders.
We have track counters on the trails here, so we know last year we had around 30,000 riders on the trails.
Tassie's now having a tourism boom. Last year, 1.2 million tourists visited Tasmania, bringing in $3 billion with them, which is 10% of the economy. An hour down the road from Derby, St Helens wants to get on that mountain bike gravy train.
Yeah, Derby's definitely leading the way in what potential there is in small towns, I suppose. If you build build good trails with support infrastructure, people will come.
Ben Petman is the trail project manager at the local Breakaday Council.
Tassie's a really go-to destination. It's globally and or nationally and globally, mountain biking is definitely picking up, becoming more mainstream, I suppose.
Ever since I started asking for trail recommendations, you guys have said Blue Derby, Blue Derby.
The planned St Helens Mountain Bike Trails has two parts. The first part is a 66-kilometre network of looping tracks to the south of the town with all different levels. Think of it kind of like a ski resort. And the second part is a 43-kilometre track that will extend from the existing Derby track and bring riders all the way down to the famous Bay of Fires coastline. Ben from the council says residents are excited about the opportunities.
Yeah, there's been a fair bit of information around in relation to job growth and development. I mean, they're talking potentially 180 jobs in the region because of the trail network over time as things mature and progress. And most definitely the opportunity for locals to take a lead in that, we're promoting and encouraging and looking to see where that can take us.
At the local bike shop in the main street of St Helens, the owner Matt and one of his young customers, Hugh, are both pretty pumped about the trails.
Yeah, of course. I don't think it's going to be quite as big of an effect on the community as Derby, of course, though.
I mean, that's the reason I moved here 3 years ago. Most of the young people that I know or people that I come across in the community are really excited about it.
It's kind of a cool East Coast thing to happen. Like, it's happened to Derby and they've kind of shot off with it, so I kind of see that it'll shoot off here a bit more and there'll be a bit more tourism here.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J.
That's a young mountain biker speaking to Joe Lauder in Tassie, and you're listening to a story about the booming mountain bike scene there. In St Helens, where we're hosting the One Night Stand this weekend, the council are planning to build over $4 million worth of tracks. They say it'll bring tourism dollars into the community, but of course we're talking about Tassie wild country, so not everyone's happy about it, especially conservationists. There's a small group that are trying to stop it from happening. A few people texting in already about this story. To those who think mountain biking scene in Tassie is no good for the environment, they should stop driving cars. Pete and Perth says, Canada has a huge downhill mountain bike industry and it's environmentally a non-issue. Let's go deeper into the story. Here's Joe Lauder with one of the conservationists who are standing up against the development of mountain bike tracks near St Helens.
So we've just pulled up on the side of the road. There's a kind of sandy track. We're only a couple of k's from the coast, from the Bay of Fires, and this is one of the areas where the bike track is going to go through.
So we're just walking along here. I just wanted to give you an idea. As you can see, if you look around, you can see there's a lot of diversity in the shrub layer here, which is a really important part of biodiversity.
I'm out at the site of one of the proposed mountain bike tracks with local conservationist Todd Dudley from the Northeast Bioregional Network. He's a passionate conservationist. He even gave me a copy of his band CD that's called It's Not the Full Story Without the Understory.
So basically all these plants that you see all around us here, all those different understory plants, a whole lot of them will end up dying.
Todd's number one concern here is the spread of a root rot fungus called Phytophthora that can kill off large numbers of native plants, according to Parks Tasmania. It's a big issue in some parts of Tasmania, but it hasn't yet taken hold in this part of the coast.
It'll be spread further and it'll infect areas that currently aren't infected, so it's totally irresponsible. It's inexcusable.
So does it spread, like, because of the bikes going through? Is that the...?
Yeah, Phytophthora is spread by soil, so it can be on tyres or even people's shoes. The problem is it only needs a minute amount of infected soil to get into the environment, and that whole area is irreversibly infected. There is other issues to do with erosion as well, but by far the biggest concern for the Mount Pearson and Doctors Peak area is the spread of Phytophthora.
Would you be supportive of more mountain biking tracks if they weren't in such sensitive areas?
Yeah, well, right from the beginning, we've said that we don't have a problem with bike riding and bike tracks. We just, our view's always been that there's a lot of existing tracks and trails, thousands of kilometres actually of them in the northeast of Tasmania, and that's what they should be using them, not actually creating a route through a really sensitive area.
Soil from one place to another.
All right, so this would be a way. Do you want me to go? Thank you.
When we leave this area and jump back into Todd's four-wheel drive, he even brushes down our shoes.
Just scrubbing off my boots so we don't spread anything?
Yeah, because we're going from one spot to another. That's quite
sweet.
We're comfortable with the fact that where we are providing these trails, that it's we're treading softly.
Ben Petman from the Breakaday Council has a different take to Todd on the environmental damage of the tracks.
The areas that we're putting the trails in aren't wilderness. They definitely had impact on forestry or mining in the past. We need to respect the land, and you know what we do is exposing people to how beautiful this place is.
The council's put out a tender for a specialist company to come in and build the tracks. They'll use a bobcat, and the trails will be built according to the International Mountain Bike Association's guidelines that'll take into account the local topography and areas that are more susceptible to erosion. Ben says the council has gone to huge lengths to address all of the concerns raised by conservationists.
The whole alignment of the trails were assessed and walked by an ecologist, or a number of ecologists actually, a number of years ago to identify the best location for the trail. We've undertaken that. We've undertaken investigation on eagle management, for example. There are quite a number of eagle nests that are within the area, and we've totally modified the trail network to accommodate the requirement to protect those animals, and it's something that we're very proud of.
Ben says they're also developing special washdown stations and messaging for riders to help stop the spread of Phytophthora.
The environment is very important, and root rot is one of the funguses here that is potentially a problem, so that we're putting in place something that's going to minimise the potential for the spread of that.
But Todd Dudley from the North East Bioregional Network isn't convinced.
How do people in the town react to your opposition to this development? Because it seems like there are a lot of people that are very excited about it.
Well, I don't know, really. I haven't really spoken to people about it that much, really. I'm just basically putting forward the reality that if this track goes through these areas, they're going to spread Phytophthora and there's going to be significant environmental impact. And I would hope that people who live around here would value the area sufficiently that they'd be concerned about that. But maybe just having a track is more important to them.
And for Todd, this is part of a bigger question about how Tasmania can balance its environment and tourism development.
All of these conservation areas that everybody loves and which locals and visitors enjoy so much wouldn't be here if it wasn't for conservationists. And it's all very well for people to say, oh, you know, you're opposing to this or you're anti that. But the reality is, without concerted efforts of conservationists over decades, Tasmania wouldn't have all this beautiful natural environment that we have now.
Hack Triple J.
Todd Dudley from the North East Bioregional Network in Tasmania. On the text line, Lee from Queensland says, mountain bike tracks are small in comparison to walking tracks and walkers move off them a lot more, therefore having a bigger impact. Tez from Hobart says, I love Tassie and I think it's a great idea. Don't hold Tassie back. Pat says one of the oldest mountain bike tracks is Karanda in far north Queensland and it runs through World Heritage areas. It's still open, done correctly, no problem. Love to hear your reaction. Do you share the concerns about the environmental impact of mountain bike trails in wilderness in Tasmania? Give me a call, 1300 055536 or text in 0439 757555. Let's go to someone who has a lot of experience building mountain bike trails. Nick Bowman is the director and owner of Destination Trails. He has 15 years experience building the trails. He has a bachelor degree in applied sciences and biodiversity management as well, which makes his perspective quite interesting. Nick, can you allay the fears of the conservationists by telling us how you build these tracks and what impact it makes?
Yeah, sure, Tom. Look, we've obviously heard there's pretty strict planning that's already been put in place to avoid areas of sensitive vegetation and habitat. So there's quite a high level of planning that's already taken place. That's probably the first step. But then during construction, we're really sticking to pretty strict guidelines to minimise erosion, minimise any water sitting on the trail itself. I mean, my personal preference is to keep trails really dry. Make sure they drain well, so then you're not really picking up mud while you're riding along. And that trail design is key to ensuring that, you know, we reduce the potential spread of any diseases or even weed seeds and that sort of thing.
But is some spread inevitable? I mean, are there reasonable concerns about the fungus that the conservationists in St. Helens are talking about?
Look, I think it's important to recognise these concerns and address them where we can. certainly, you know, wildlife and walkers can still spread this root rot fungus around. So that's something we, you know, with the wildlife, we can't control that at all. I think there's other techniques you can use in particularly sensitive areas. You might even consider surfacing the trail with different pH type materials like limestone or so forth, which really discourages the spread of this root rot fungus. And even if you had boardwalks and so forth in really soft areas to keep the bikes out of the wet areas, then that's going to significantly reduce that potential to spread too. And I think the other side of it too is that, you know, a high proportion of mountain bike riders are pretty precious about their machinery, so they do keep them pretty clean. And if there is a bike wash handy, they will use it. And particularly, I think it's a good idea to make sure they're clean before they enter any pristine areas. And having said that as well, I mean, we've heard from the council that this area has been mined and also logged in the past too.
Well, so that brings up an interesting point about where you're building these tracks. And in this case, it's not like they're in pristine, untouched wilderness.
Yeah, so generally we're using areas that have already been impacted at some point in the past, and I think we're lucky that Tasmanian forests have recovered so well and they're so pretty now. I mean, parts of Derby, you'd hardly know that it was the biggest tin mine in the Commonwealth. It's quite a lush forest now, and it's a real privilege to ride through those areas. But I think, you know, importantly, we need to remember that trails are how people connect to nature. We really need to encourage people to get out there and appreciate what's there. And, you know, these purpose-built trails perform much better in terms of ecological protection than the existing old fire tracks or logging tracks or mining tracks or motorbike tracks. So these new school trails are really going to minimise those long-term impacts and avoid that spread of diseases and so forth.
Okay, let's speak to someone who is concerned about the environmental impact so much that he thinks some tracks shouldn't be going ahead. Rod Keenan is a professor at the School of Ecosystem and Forest Sciences at Melbourne Uni. Rod, what concerns you most about the environmental impact of mountain biking?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, thanks for having me on the program.
Pleasure.
Yeah, I'd really like to start by saying, agreeing with the last speaker, that mountain biking is a great use. It gets people out in the bush, enjoying the environment, and when you can create destination settings like Derby or the one that's planned, it will bring income benefits for regional communities and businesses. But it does have to be designed well and in the right place. So
Where shouldn't they be?
Well, we shouldn't really be putting these sort of tracks in sensitive environments, areas that have habitat for threatened species, where they might impact on soil and water value, and also where they might impact on other users' enjoyment. So, with a lot of national park planning, you need good zoning so that to identify areas where different uses are compatible, and so I think that we need the right sort of zoning, location, and design to
right.
make
these
things work. Right.
So, do you have any examples where we've got it wrong with these, officially built and funded trails, or even the kind of tracks that people just build on their own?
Yeah, well, there have been areas. I had a student last year who did a project with Forest Corp in New South Wales, where local groups had set up informal tracks on Crown land and state forest near the towns, and some of those had been put through the habitat of rare or threatened species, or particularly sensitive situations with erodible soils along streamside areas.
Okay, yeah, interesting to hear that one example there. We're almost out of time. Sorry, Rod. Nick, do you think there are times where we have got it wrong, or that even people building their own tracks and maybe building them in places where they shouldn't be?
I think that informal proliferation of trails is not the right way to go. I'm certainly in favour of formalising these trails and experiences, and that way we can manage these impacts.
Hack on Triple J.
All right, that's all we had time for on the radio show. I want to give you podcast listeners a greater sense of what the text line was saying. They're flooding in. Jonathan from Newcastle says, mountain bikers are some of the biggest environmentalists I know. The bush is meant to be enjoyed, not fenced off. Another listener says, better than the alternative, logging. And I guess that's an interesting one because Tassie's been trying to work out, you know, the direction of its economy, and tourism's been a major focus. And I guess this is a way of people earning money or creating economic value from the wilderness there without tearing it down. Another listener says, I'm a local bush care coordinator. Illegal clearing for mountain bike tracks destroys the integrity of the environment. The erosion I've witnessed is terrible. So that's an interesting perspective from someone who's actually out there trying to regenerate bushland. Another listener says, as a parks worker, I can confidently say mountain bikes cause way less damage than feral horses in natural areas. Very interesting comparison there. And there's still loads of people firing up about Tony Abbott's appointment as special envoy to Indigenous Affairs. One person says, think of Abbott's wonderful record as Minister for Women. Another says, Aboriginal people across Australia should turn their backs and refuse to meet Mr. Abbott. Send a strong message. He doesn't deserve a conversation. Basically, no one thinking that appointment was a good idea. It will be interesting to see what he does in that role. Thanks for listening. Talk to you tomorrow.